Kia ora rawatū, e te iwi, nau mai hoki mai ki kaiteaki kōrero with Kiri. It's my pleasure now to be joined by Catherine. Catherine is a kaiteaki out doing the mahi, beautiful mahi with Ngāti Pāhauwera Development Trust. It is an iwi authority representing about 85 hapū of Ngāti Pāhauwera. And we're so privileged to have you joining us now. Tēnei te mihi nui kia koe, Catherine.
Tēnā koe, Kiri. Thanks for having me.
You're so welcome. You're so welcome. Nau mai, haere mai. Can I start by asking you to introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about you?
Yeah, for sure. Ko Aio, he iri ahau o Ngāti Pāhauwera, Ngāti Pāhanganu me mai tūhoi hoki. Engari, e whānau mai au i Otipoti, no te Waipounamu ahau. Ko Catherine Gale tō kuingoa, he kaimahi au o te Ngāti Pāhauwera Development Trust. Kia ora.
Oh, kia ora, kia ora. So can you tell us a little bit about your mahi? What do you do?
Certainly. So I'm the Kai Whakahaere Tile, which means I look after a lot of our environmental projects. So that includes, in particular, water monitoring and learning about, freshwater and how our waterways are looking and also how everything that lives in them is getting on, particularly at the moment after Cyclone Gabrielle.
Kāroha, kāroha, I just feel for our whānau down those ways. I'm in Rotorua and I'm Ngāti Kahungunu as well, so nei te mihi, but so much destruction has gone through. So how are our waterways looking down there?
Yeah, well, I think better now, but when it sort of first happened, it was really devastating for all of the tile. The Mohaka River, which is one of our main rivers, ran, sort of brown silt colour for maybe 6 months after the cyclone. It took a really long time for the water to look blue and sort of the way that it had looked prior to the cyclone again. Banks of silt metres high all along the river. Bridges were washed out in the Waikare River. So it's not that bad now, but it's still an ongoing thing. Still lots of silt everywhere. I'd say the rivers are still quite fragile. When there's a bit of rain, that silt washes back in. It has been hugely traumatic for the environment, but a year on, things are starting to look a bit better.
Oh, that's good. That's good. Can you tell me about the damage that silt does? What's the kōrero with silt? What is it? Why is it a problem? Because some might think, well, it's just dirt. It's just dirt that's moved from one place to another, but What is it made of and what's the problem with it?
So silt, it's a fine sediment, I suppose. So it's part of soil. It comes off the land. And the issue with it getting in the water, it's really just not supposed to be there. So one of the problems is that it affects the clarity. So that's when you get that muddy, cloudy water, you can't see through it, it's not clear. There's lots of different issues. It's an issue for anyone who wants to get drinking water out of the river. They have to treat it much more carefully and filter it more. And then there's the impacts on the things that live in the water. So, for example, some fish need to be able to see their food in order to catch it. So that affects them. They can't hunt their prey. It can also clog up the gills in fish, makes it harder for them to breathe. And another one is it in rivers, they're called hard bottom rivers, where you have gravels and stones on the bottom. There's little spaces in between those stones where lots of the insects that live in the water like to live. And if those spaces get filled up with silt, that's their habitat, like their home. And they can't live there anymore. And because they're at the bottom of that food chain, everything further up is affected as well. So if you don't have insects, macroinvertebrates, you don't get the bigger fish. And then we can't all go out fishing. And all the other flow-on effects for you know, the wider food web and the ecosystem that that causes. So those are just sort of a couple of the ways. It's, yeah, a massive impact having lots of silt in the water.
Thank you. Really interesting listening to some of those effects that, you know, I hadn't thought about before, them filling up all of the little holes where the insects live. It, you know, it didn't even cross my mind. So beautiful to hear you caught it all like that and just, you know, paint that picture for us. How are the insect population looking now? And a second question to that, can it go back to how it was, or is that irreparable damage there now? You know, is that just going to sit on the bottom of the awa?
All right, so I'll start with the first question was,
Sorry, aroha mai. I'm terrible with doing double questions. So the first question was, how are the insects now?
Mm-hmm. So, yes, we're seeing those signs of life coming back. I know for the first few months, after the cyclone, we actually couldn't get to our rivers because it knocked out one of the main bridges on State Highway 2. So when we did start going back, for a long time, you know, you can see them. If you go to a river and you just pick up a rock and look at the bottom of it, you'll quite often see a little bug kind of scuttling away. You can look for those signs. And when I started doing that, it took a few months. I can remember it taking a long time before you could go down to the river. I'm remembering the Mohaka River and see those insects again. But a year on, they're much more plentiful. You can see that there has been a recovery of those populations. So for them, it just takes a bit of time, I think. As long as they have that habitat that they need, they'll come back. And your second question was, is it irreparable? Can it ever go back? So that's a bit complicated, and I suppose it depends on which river and which spot you're looking at. There's certainly some effects that it's hard to imagine. It would take another kind of event in the magnitude of a cyclone to change it back. So rivers that have just completely changed their course, the channel's in a different place, that probably won't go back until something equally as big happens again. But in terms of getting the silt out, yes, it will eventually flow out, I think, in most cases. And the big thing is trying to make sure no more silt gets in the water. And that's where you look at things like planting riparian buffers and putting fences in so that stock can't get in. And they sort of cause erosion. They help silt getting into the water. So it's prevention now, I would say, would be the main thing.
What are some of the other issues that are happening with the awa? So you, as I understand it, you're monitoring about 30 sites on the Mohaka, the Waikare, and the Waihua. Is that correct?
Every hour is different. So I think we're quite fortunate in Aorohe that water quality isn't too much of an issue most of the time. Oh, and water quantity. It depends. Let me think about that. Different parts of the awa, so, you know, because rivers have tributaries, like smaller creeks that flow into the main big part, and so it depends what's going on in those places and parts of the catchment. So in our area, some places have quite intensive land use, so like a dairy farm or a more intense sheep or beef operation, and that has particular kinds of effects on water quality. Forestry, it has effects as well. The water quality usually. And on other parts of the region, the quantity of the water, how much is available, is an issue. I know that's a thing up in Tairawhiti as well. It depends where you go, really, what the issues are.
And you're wanting to build capacity within the iwi and, you know, enable some identification of different sites that might need restoration. But what I hear when I say that is you want more kaitiaki out there caring for our awa and putting their wairua and their, you know, their mauri into the process of restoring our whenua and our wai. How can people get involved and where do they start?
Well, there's a few different ways. So firstly, yes, absolutely. There's, I think, not enough of us is the feeling. Always, there's so much work to be done in the space of environmental restoration. So there can always be more hands, more help, definitely. You can get involved if there's a catchment group in your area set up. That's one way. Getting in touch with mana whenua in your local iwi definitely would be another. You can start your own projects. Like, you know, it doesn't have to be at a group scale. You can do your own efforts. So if you're a landowner, you can think about native planting and riparian fencing, doing your own monitoring. There's lots of really inexpensive ways that you can learn about the waterways on your own property or in your own area. And so you can start looking into some of that citizen science. There's lots of amazing websites and resources on that. Yeah, it sort of depends what you're most interested in. There's lots of different areas that people can get involved with.
Can you tell us a few of the different ways that you're seeing happening down there now? So, you know, can you tell us about the variety of things that people can get involved with?
I'll just think about that. I know for us, we have been doing things like reaching out to schools just more recently. Someone made a joke to me about, well, I mean, a joke but also a serious statement about how important it is to sort of hook them in while they're young and get them interested. Mm-hmm. So we have lifelong kaitiaki. Yes. So we are putting a bit of a focus on schools. Just at the moment, and then there's also collaborating with other groups. I think it's an area where there's not a lot of resource, you know, a lot of funding that you can get hold of, so working with other groups is an important part, I suppose, of being really efficient with that. For us, well, in this role, I'm sort of focused on what can iwi members do. So it's reaching out to those people in all the different marae. And because we do have some resource, just providing opportunities, I guess, to come out and learn about different ways of monitoring waterways. So we're focused mostly on rivers and lakes. It's that, like you said, that building capacity, learning about the environment so that we can, well, the first step is sort of knowing what's going on. And then you can work out what you need to do, you know, if restoration is needed. So I suppose my answer is education is one of the big things that we are focusing on at the moment.
Rawe, can you tell me about, you know, extending on education, mātauranga Māori, and how that plays a role in your mahi? Probably the biggest role.
Definitely. It's, you know, it's something that we're all trying to work out how to do at the moment. For me, I've got university training in sort of that Western science, for want of a better phrase, and how to do environmental monitoring. And I've found in my time working in this space, it's really, mātauranga Māori and science are really compatible and complementary. I can't think of a time where they've disagreed. They usually back each other up. So we try and do a combination. And something I try to really make clear from the outset is that it's not about blending them together and, you know, sort of changing one or the other. It's about keeping their integrity, you know, keeping them separate and looking at different tools in the kite. They bring different things, they provide different kinds of information. So one of my favourite kind of uses of mātauranga is looking at the origins of place names. So if you have a waterway with a name like Kaituna or Waituna, you can be pretty confident that there were eels in there at the time that was named. And so if you go back to that place and there are no tuna there, that's a degradation that has occurred and maybe that's a goal for restoration. So we try and include things like oral histories and place names in our kind of baseline for our monitoring, expectations of a particular site are informed by, yeah, the kōrero our ancestors have handed down about how that place used to be. And that helps inform our restoration goals and the kinds of things that we would monitor. So if we know that a particular site is known for clean, healing waters, we might focus more on water quality. If we know that site was a mahinga kai site for Tuna or Waikato or whatever it is, we might focus on those populations for that site. That's one of the ways that we incorporate mātauranga. Yeah.
Beautiful. What about te mana o te wai and those the principles of te mana o te wai? How do you incorporate those into your mahi? And I'm really interested to hear how with your university mahi and that Western science, how that combines, how those two combine with all of that science and then te mana o te wai principles.
Oh, that's a big question.
Sorry, I can hear that. I can hear that. You're the wahine to ask, so I'm learning myself.
Yeah, well, I think the main thing with te mana o te wai, so there's those six principles, but there's also that hierarchy of obligations. So the sort of, in my mind anyway, the number one thing about it is that the needs of the water body, the needs of the river come first. It's ecological needs. It's sort of a nod to its intrinsic value or its right to exist. So first and foremost, the river has to be allowed and enabled to be a river. And that's, you think that sounds really basic, but you'd be surprised at the conversations you have sometimes. So for example, if you're having a conversation about how much water should be in the river, it seems very obvious that a river should flow. There should be water in it. Like, that's a really basic place to start. And particular rivers will have particular values associated with them that are part of the unique characteristics of that river. I think that's an important part of te mana o te wai, from my point of view anyway, that we don't just have this kind of cookie-cutter template approach to how we manage our waterways. They're like people, they're individuals, and they should be treated like that. So that's, one of the important ways that you would apply te mana o te wai in my mind. So when you talk about the principles, I just got to remind myself what they are. There's kaitiakitanga, and that goes with governance. Manaaki, I think, is another. Have you got them in front of you? I'm trying to remember what they are off the top of my head.
I'm quickly, very quickly Googling it too, because I'm the same as you. Sometimes my mind can be like a sieve. It just comes in and it goes out. Te mana o te wai, let me see. Well, now I'm on the spot.
That's all right. Certainly kaitiaki tanga is one of them. And I think how am I going to speak to that? It's, the word kaitiaki is a really loaded one. I hesitate to call myself kaitiaki. And I've heard a kōrero about how that's a word that's applied to, I suppose, spiritual beings in our tile, like Taniwha, for example. And so, an application or a way that we consider that particular principle and the way we do what we do is being mindful of the kaha wairua aspect of everything. We've got kaumātua who advise us about when it's appropriate to do particular things. And for me, with my university training, it drives me mad that I can't just book in a day. I'll have planned it for weeks in advance. You get all the people together for the kaupapa, and then on the morning of, we might have some advice that says, today's not it. You're going to have to postpone. And, there's a good reason, and usually a wairua reason, that it's not appropriate. That's one of, I suppose, the points of difference in the way that we would operate. We're really mindful of the histories of the places we go to. If it's been the site of pakanga or, I don't know, Urupa, those particularly tapu kinds of places, that affects the way that we would go about doing our monitoring and our checking in with the tile. It's Oh, it's all encompassing. Yeah, very complicated.
Well, I've got those six principles, so I'm just going to read them out for anybody that is going, come on, come on, Kitty, you should know this stuff on radio. So the first is mana whakahaere. The second is kaitiakitanga, manaakitanga, governance, stewardship, and care and respect. That's what I've got. That's what I've found online. Hopefully that's right. If it's not, I might be wrong. Am I wrong? Does it sound wrong to you?
Yes, no, that's right. That's right. And the sort of roughly, it's the way I interpret it is that there's really only three principles, but there's sort of the Te Ao Māori way of understanding it, and I don't know if you call it the Te Ao Pākehā way, but I don't know, a not Māori way of understanding it, a different way.
Yes, they're kind of like
stewardship matches with kaitiakitanga, that kind of thing.
Yes.
So if I've talked about kaitiakitanga, mana whakahaere is a really interesting one. So I think, you know, that's about autonomy and sort of exercising your rights to be in places. And we are really fortunate to have a lot of Māori-owned land in our rohe. So a lot of it is having our own people go out to our own places on our whenua to do this work. But in saying that, I suppose it links into manaakitanga, where we also are trying to work with other people in the community. And I think that's a really important point to make, is that all this kind of thing, restoration, we might like to do it ourselves, but I don't think that's realistic for us at the moment. It's really, and I think it should be a community effort. It's everybody's responsibility and obligation to look after the environments that we live in. Mm. And so ideally we would work together towards that common goal. So manaaki is, I suppose, towards each other and towards the environment, and a recognition that we rely on it. Without the environment, there's no society, there are no people. Acknowledgement of that relationship. And to go back to mana whakahaere, yeah, just, you know, we belong to these places. I think that's what it's about. We have obligations that come with being mana whenua in places. So it's, yeah, exercising that mana to as best you can to get the good outcomes that you're looking for. And quite often that means, working with councils, with government, with other people in your catchments. In that role as mana whenua.
Oh, kia ora. Interesting. It's interesting to me that you get the you get this kind of dual principles that are actually, you're 100% bang on. They are actually basically each other in like a mirror reflection of each other. The mana whakahaere, kaitiakitanga, manaakitanga, that is governance, stewardship, care and respect. But it's interesting to me that they're all laid out differently. You know, the mana whakahaere, yeah, it's not a translation. It's almost Te Ao Māori way and a Western way of looking at it. So, but I'm never going to forget those now. Those are, awesome. And I'm going to have a little bit more of a look into it. But I just wanted to return briefly, and I won't hold you for too much longer because I know it's kai time and it's time to have with our whānau. But I just wanted to return briefly to your kōrero about the word kaitiaki, because I think it's a really important kōrero to kind of flesh out, because it has become such a common used term now. And it's become synonymous with someone that's just out, you know, caring for the whenua. But it does have such a deeper meaning. And I remember, you know, my dad telling me different stories about kaitiaki. Growing up, there was no such thing as a kaitiaki that was an environmentalist out doing mahi, you know. It was kaitiaki. You had a kaitiaki if you saw that manu, you know, come and land on your windscreen or you stop driving. You know, I've heard of a manu actually coming in a whānau were driving, and the manu came and sat and just put its wings out over the window, and then they stopped, obviously, and then later on down the road there was like a, you know, potential for an accident to happen down there. And those kinds of kōrero, there's and I tread carefully in this space, talking about those things in this space. But heaha ōwhakaaro, you know, when you say it's loaded, what are your thoughts around the, I guess, I don't know if you'd call it evolving of the concept, or like a dual kind of modern take on it, or heaha ōwhakaaro?
Yeah, well, I'm going to preface what I say next by saying it's just my opinion, so I'm not representing all of Pāhoeira or anybody else when I answer this question in particular. And it's almost a question you want to refer to a real expert. I think perhaps people have started to take the word quite literally, you know, the root word being chaki, which means to protect or to guard, that kind of thing. And then kai is the prefix, means the doer of that action. So, and that is what we're out trying to do. We are trying to protect and guard these places. But the word kaitiaki has this really deep cultural context to what it means. And perhaps people who might not be familiar with all of that context are using that word in a different way. And I want to be careful to say I'm not judging that. Because language evolves, it's just how it works. So for me, it's just a personal preference. That's the way that I use the word kaitiaki, is for, just like you said, like some whānau have manu that are their particular tohu, guardian for them. I know that different iwi, they have their particular kaitiaki in their places that look after them. And so that's how I choose to apply the word. But I'm not criticising anybody else who uses it differently. But that's my whakaaro on what it means and how to use it.
I want to mihi to you for bringing that up, though, because I think that's a really important thing that we mustn't lose sight of, is that, you know, and it goes back to your beautiful kōrero about the names of places and how, you know, you can look at the words that our tipuna used. They had far deeper meaning and were more significant than just, you know, a kupu. There was a kōrero, a kaupapa, a wairua, a pūrākau, all kinds of things, tikanga, everything. And then, you know, te ao, wairua, that's all in there. So I just want to mihi to you, sister, for raising that. And again, I'm ko tāua tāua tērā, I'm the same as you. Like, I get called a kaitiaki a lot. This is kaitiaki kōrero with kiri. But actually, when I was a little girl, kaitiaki was a different thing. And it was almost something that you were very, you know, like dad just only told me a few stories every now and then, but they always used to make me go, ooh, you know. So there's a taputanga around that I just want to acknowledge. I think it's important for anybody that is using that word to understand that actually there's another kōrero that's far deeper and and in my mind far more beautiful. And I'd encourage everybody to embrace our reo way. I've said it before on this show tonight, I'm just showing off now, that I'm going to a reo wānanga, the first taiao wānanga with Professor Rangi Mata Mua and Rereata Mākeha Mā and others of that mana. And I'm so excited about that. I'm going to come back on here rearing. But thank you so much for your time tonight. Just finally, are there any words of encouragement that you have to others who are out doing the mahi or who would like to get out and do the mahi and join in with the mahi, because it's very beautiful, very satisfying?
Well, to those who are already doing it, yeah, he mihi nui kia koutou. It can be really hard work and it can be really heavy work. Working in tile spaces. So just massive acknowledgements to people who are already doing that. And it can be thankless too, so let me thank you. To those who are thinking about getting into the space, who maybe haven't been too involved so far, as you say, it's massively rewarding. Like when you, I don't know, you come across, I'm trying to think of an example I can give you. Oh, for me, I didn't even know freshwater mussels existed sort of at the beginning of my journey, and now they're just my favourite thing, and I cannot even describe to you how wonderful it was the first time I found a live mussel in a river where I knew they had been and I wanted to know if they were still there. Like it's hugely rewarding, satisfying, and it can just be really good fun. Like a lot of it does involve going out for picnics with your mates at the river while you're there checking in on it. And I think that's, I'd encourage people to think about the interactions with nature like that, like going out into beautiful spaces. It's good for your wairua to do that. And that's sort of how we are meant to live, I think, in harmony with our environment, aware of it, trying to look after it. And if we look after it, it will look after us. So I might leave it on that thought.
Oh, beautiful, sister. Thank you so much. I'd love to come in and meet you sometime and come out and then meet these mussels. I had this big smile on my face when you were talking about that, because I know what you mean, and that must have been so satisfying to find that first mussel. So one day I'm going to put that in my dream to-do list, is to come out with Catherine and get you to show me these mussels and take me for a picnic on the side of the awa. That sounds beautiful. But I also want to meet you for the work that you do, and for spending some time with us tonight to share your aroha for the whenua and encourage others to get out there too and connect again with ourselves. Out with the mahi. So nei te mihi nui kia koe, kia kaha mō mahi, kei te hara mai, and I look forward to having a kōrero with you in person sometime soon.
Hello, tēnā koe.
Kia ora. Oe te whānau, we've been spoiled tonight. Finished the show with two beautiful wahine e mahi ana I te mahi tiake I te whenua. So spoilt tonight, and I always appreciate it, having a kōrero with others who are more knowledgeable than me in this space. You know, I'm not a scientist by any means of any imagination, and so I learn things all the time. So thank you for joining us tonight on Radio Wātea, Kaitiaki Kōrero with Kiri. It's been my pleasure to join you again. If you would like to share some whakaaro on this show, or you have somebody that you think needs to come on and be interviewed, share their whakaaro, please get in touch with us. You can call through to the studio, 0800 4603 603. Hop online and send us an email. If you just Google Te Reo Irirangi o Wātea, or just put in Wātea, Waatea, then you will get us, you will find us on there, you can get in touch. We'd be very happy to hear from you. It's lovely to share these whakaaro and these kōrero. So, nei te mihi nui kia koutou, tū mai, kaitiaki mā, tū mai.